Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Take Command Podcast. I'm Greg Hoffman. He is Logan Paulson. Commanders select five players in the 2025 NFL Draft. We already talked about Josh Connerly, Logan. He got his own episode. First-round picks, they get special treatment. Second-round pick, Trey Amos, he could have been the pick at 29. And that's not hyperbole. That is something that Adam Peters said in the press conference, and I believe him. He is someone who is mocked to the Commanders occasionally at 29. He is someone that I think ideally is a second-round pick, but we very much thought he would be gone by the time the draft got into the 50s, maybe even into the 40s, and suddenly he was available at 61. What a gift for the Commanders if Trey Amos turns out to be the player that I think a lot of us think that he can be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just really excited about him. And again, like, you know, kind of kicked around the college football landscape. I think he was at, he was a Raging Cajun for a little bit early in his career. I think
teammates with Percy Butler and Andre Jones Jr.
Yeah, and then he, you know, obviously goes to Alabama, goes to Ole Miss and kind of finishes his career there. And I do think there is something to that. A guy that kind of had some success early, tried to capitalize on that success at Alabama, saw some adversity, went and kind of made his own way at Ole Miss. I just think like there's something to guys that have experienced the highs and lows in the last 4 years of their college career. And it's something that honestly, you know, the transfer portal, I am not a big fan of it, but I do think it helps you kind of understand the character of a person at a little bit higher level. And that guy, it was not a straight path. It was not a straight path for Jaden Daniels either. And so of the things about his profile, and again, we'll talk about that more specifically in a second, that's one that really sticks out to me, is a guy that kind of said, I want to be a starting football player. I want to be a contributor for a team, and I'm going to find a way to make that happen. And I think when you watch him at Ole Miss, he's big, he's long. I think he's got really good instincts for the position. He's very comfortable. I think he's got the ability to play in man-to-man. And I think the most important thing about his profile is he's got great ball skills. And he's got a really good feel for when the ball's in the air, how to play it. He gets a lot of interceptions, like tough interceptions, like jumping over people, like tracking through traffic, vision on the quarterback type stuff. And I just think about like kind of the ball of clay that he is. He's pretty polished. He's pretty refined. But I think about what that could be with just a little bit better, a little bit more specific coaching. And it gets me really excited, you know. And again, he's got to come in and compete and do all the things. And that's what makes a commander, is your willingness to compete. When I look at his profile, like, he's done it and he wants it and he's going to make it happen. So if I'm being critical, if there's a reason that I think he did fall to 61, there's times where I'm like, is he the most urgent football player? There's times where he is and there's times where he isn't. So can we get that dial running a little bit hotter more frequently? And again, it's so hard with corners in college right now because of the spread offense and the spread principles and the wider hashes. Like, there's times where the corner, like, you might as well just take those guys off the field because they're just so uninvolved. It makes the evaluation tough. But I think I'm very, very high on him and the skill set that he brings and what and how that fits with Joe Witt Jr. specifically in this defense.
Joel Klatt said something that was really good and interesting on NFL Network's draft coverage on Friday. They were talking about one of the receivers, and I think Daniel Jeremiah had said, like, you know, sometimes he takes plays off, and he goes, you know, something that we should say is, and I don't know whether it's the case with this guy, but there are college offenses where they tell the backside receiver, take this play off.
100%.
Like, just don't waste your effort. Just take it, literally take the play off. And so if you're a corner and you know that, it's hard for me to like, yeah, if you're involved and you're not given action, if you're not given effort, then yeah, we got a problem. But if you're on the backside of a play and you're not really locked in, I'm not going to be like, oh, that guy's not a psycho. It's like, he might've been told to do that to save his energy for the next play. Because he knows he's on the backside of a play with a wide receiver who's not giving a rip on that play either, because he's also been coached to do that. So just a fun, quirky college football thing that is worth noting, courtesy of Joel Klatt, who's very good on the college analysis for Fox. I think with Amos, the aggression that he does play with when he is locked in, like screams commander.
I don't want to say that he's not locked in, but there are times where they're like, oh, like a little whatever. But I like the player. So don't let me, I'm just saying, like, if there's a reason.
No, 100%. What you said made sense. I was just adding some context to it of something that, like, hey, this is a weird quirk about college football that I didn't know as someone who doesn't watch a ton of college football, that someone who lives in that sport passed along. So, but, you know, Amos is aggressive. There's a violence to his play. Like, there's all the stuff that the Commanders 100% look for, you know, from Dane's profile in the Beast, says at times he can get a little off balance, including as a breakdown as a tackler. But again, when I talk about the attributes I want from a corner, I want him to be a good tackler, but it is not the top trait on the list. Like, I want you to be good in coverage, and Trey Amos is really, really good in coverage. I want you to have the traits that I want, that I can mold you if I'm especially a Commander's corner, knowing Joe Witt and Dan Quinn's history with that position, and he's got that. And I think the last thing, Logan, that to me really stands out is what a win for the Commanders is. This is such a slot-heavy group of corners. When Jeremy was on the episode that you were gone, he goes, this is the slottiest group of corners that I ever did see. And so you got a guy that's in a draft full of slot corners, a bona fide outside guy. And he's got some time to learn, because if you need to play Mikey outside and Jonathan Jones inside opposite of Lattimore to start, okay. But hopefully he comes in, he's ready to go. And if he wins that outside job and shows that he's ready, that lets you put Sainer still back in the slot. And then the biggest question, I mean, obviously, you know what the questions are with Mikey in the slot and with a rookie outside. There's going to be ups and downs. But your biggest question at corner all of a sudden becomes, like, what is Marshawn Lattimore? Is he the guy that we saw last year against the Eagles? Or is he the guy that we saw last year against the, you know, some other teams where he played well, and obviously the guy that we've seen for years be great with the Saints? And then if as long as Amos pans out, you figure out Lattimore, either he's good, you re-sign him, keep on moving forward. If he's not, no guaranteed money in 2026, and you're back in the corner market next year for someone to play opposite at Amos and Sainer still. But you've now turned a position group that last year, I don't want to say they ignored. I think last year they took the calculated risk of, hey, we have Emmanuel Forbes. He was a first round pick a year ago. Let's see what we can get out of him. And then it didn't work. Benjamin St. Juice, he's got all these characteristics. He's 6'3", he's long. Can we coach him up? Nope. All right, fine. Never mind. Last year they took the calculated risk of this position. This year, you know, they addressed it some with Mikey, but they've obviously addressed it with Lattimore and now Trey Amos, and said, all right, we tried it. We tried with the incumbents, because we had to try with incumbents somewhere. But now we've turned that position group over to more represent who we want to be.
Yeah, and I think it's also, like, you know, we'll see what happens, but just making it more competitive, making the offensive line room more competitive, making the defensive back room more competitive is going to be a big deal. And I know there was a lot of, you know, at least people talking to me was like, oh, we didn't get an edge, I'm really disappointed. But I also think this is a way to maximize the offensive, the defensive line and the rush that you are able to cultivate, right? And I do think if you watch last year, especially in that first Tampa Bay game, like, Joe Witt Jr. did a great job creating pressure. And if the coverage in the back end was a little bit better, like, they're way more productive in terms of sacks and pressures and things like that. So I think that's something that's important to acknowledge. Like, if this makes you 10% better on the perimeter over what we had last year, like, that's going to pay dividends down the road, because ultimately you're looking just for the slightest margins of success. And I think hopefully this is what this gives you. And again, like, he's learned multiple systems. He's got great coverage instincts. He's got great ball skills. He's big. He's not super long, but he's long enough, right? And I think the physicality, the play style, that's all there for you. So I'm really excited about both these picks. Again, there's a developmental element to their game. But I think when you look at both of their histories, Connerly and Trey Amos, you think that you're betting on the right type of people to get where they go. And you know, there's no harder position, in my opinion, to play in the NFL than left or right tackle and cornerback in the NFL. So they've got their work cut out for them, but I do think they get the right type of person to get that done. And I think that's extremely exciting. And I can't wait to see him on the field here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. The other thing about the pressure, this is like a small piece of the puzzle, but like, I would assume Mikey Sainristil is a better blitzer than Noah Igbinoghene.
He was excellent at it in college.
Yeah, he was great at it. So if he's now back in the slot as opposed to outside, what kind of stuff, you know, if once a game you can time that upright and get a pressure, get a sack, get a strip, you know, that creates 2-3 turnovers for you over the course of the year, whether it's a fumble situation or whether it's just a pressure that forces a bad throw, whatever it is, like that's something that can be added to the pressure package in a more effective way. And like you said, you know, guys like Luvu and Wagner blitzing, they are excellent at it. I think they were the only duo last year in the NFL, linebacker duo, that had 20 plus pressures as teammates. And so how do those pressures get home if the coverage is better? Or quarterbacks just don't feel, if I throw it in the general direction of Benjamin St. Juice, that he'll panic and get a flag, or, you know, when Forbes is there, whatever was going to happen with him. So I think that is probably worth mentioning as well. And the pressure stuff, and they didn't force it. You know, that's what we talked about at the top too. They didn't force it with an edge. We'll talk about Kane Medrano, by the way, in a few. Like, he can play a little bit on the edge because he can apparently do everything. We'll get to that in a second. But let's continue on with the next guy, Jalen Lane. Pick 128, round 4 for Washington. We already talked about him a little bit. He's a funny guy to me to watch in some ways, because like when Ja'Marr Chase gets the ball, there's an electricity to the way he runs where you're like, wow, that guy's fast. I don't feel that with Jalen Lane, despite the fact that he's 4.34. It's just that nobody catches him. It's like he's running and it's not like it jumps off the screen. You're just like, why is nobody... Like, he is just so naturally fast, and he has like a wider base when he runs, which means when he gets hit, he takes contact and just keeps moving. So the contact balance, the speed, the toughness, like, it is all there. It screams commander. There's an intensity to him. There's a swagger to him. I have no questions as to why they wanted this guy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, earlier in the season, I think he was wearing like number 25 or something. Like,
yeah, it's a thing at Virginia Tech. You get like, I think they do it on a per game basis. So the North Carolina game, he was wearing 25 because I guess he was honored with whatever that is. All the Hokies can let us know in the comments what the exact story with that is. But yeah.
Right, but when you're like, oh, he's in 25, he looks like a runner, like a running back, right? Yeah. Like, he's got that type of, again, the contact balance, the ability to kind of make people miss. He's got a nice little, like, double stick suddenness to him. Is he the most refined route runner of all time? Probably not. But I think the thing that's tough for me in this evaluation is that, I think I said this already, is the offense at Virginia Tech is, like, it's tough to watch. It's like they're kind of in this, like, triple option, zone read, you know, like they tell the backside receiver to take the play off type of deal. And so it's a little bit funky to watch. So, but when you watch, again, even in those moments, you see a guy who's willing and capable and strong enough to go block. You see a guy who is, again, great after the catch. He's good in contested catch situations. And even though he didn't get to show a ton of route running nuance, like when he was at the combine, he didn't stick out in a bad way. You know what I mean? And when you watch his film on a down-to-down basis, you say, oh, that's a really nice comeback. Oh, that's a really nice dig. Oh, that's a really good stem on the post. So I do think it's in there. I'm not sure he got to show it. And this feels, honestly, like I say this all the time, this feels like a Kyle Shanahan receiver. And what I mean by that is, like, when Kyle Shanahan, I think I've told you this before, Craig, drafts wide receivers, like, they're just like good receivers. You know what I mean? They're not like super big. They're not like these crazy, like, oh, RAS people. And I think he probably had a great RAS, but like when you watch the film, like, they feel and they look a certain way. And when, honestly, like, that's when I watched Jalen Lane, I kind of had that vibe from him where I was like, oh, you're just good. You're just a good football player. Like, and I know that's kind of like maybe lazy analysis, but when I see a smart, competitive, tough, athletic dude that's like pouring it out for his team and making explosive plays, like, I don't know how else to describe him, right? Like, yeah, it's not always perfect, but like the good is very good. And the little stuff in between is also very good. So obviously there's a reason he's not a first round pick, but I think in the fourth round, this feels like a really, really good value.
I'll tell you, if he was 6'2", 205, I don't know how this dude's not a first round pick right, because I just looked up his RAS. He is 9.68 out of 10.
Yeah.
That is good for 112th out of 3,441 receivers from 1987 to 2025. So since 1987, of every receiver who has received a raw athletic score or a relative athletic score, he is 112th.
Yeah. And I feel like when you watch him in training camp, like, you're going to feel him. Like,
yeah,
I know you said it doesn't feel like it, like when you watch him, he doesn't feel like blazing fast.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, when I watch him on tape, like, he's just explosive. He's just an explosive push-up guy. And I really can't wait to watch him. But Do I think he's going to start right away as a receiver? Probably not. I think his value is kind of in like a gadget kind of specialty role. And then I think it's probably as a punt slash kickoff returner. We'll see how it all shakes out. But he's excellent in that role too. And I think it shows when I see dudes returning kicks, I know you're kind of wired in a special way. And that's another thing that gets me excited because it shows a great competitive toughness. And great story about him is like I go to the combine every year. I sit in like the media section. So it's super quiet. Everyone's really quiet. And he runs his first 40, and there's a section over in the fan section, which is like two sections down, so probably like 200 feet away. And they're all wearing 83 jerseys. I'm assuming it's his dad and his grandpa. Like, that's it, 83. That's my dog. And like just the support system that he's got there, the competitiveness from his family. Like if he's anything like the people in the stands, man, we're going to be all right in terms of getting a competitive football player. But it just was – that was really cool to see, and I think it kind of informs – his background and where he's coming from and how important this is to him.
Yeah. More on his background in a second. I feel like the explosiveness thing that I was saying, it's purely aesthetic. I feel like it's because he's more compact.
I understand what you're saying.
More compact. And I feel like Chase is just a little bigger. And like, so when he just gets out there, it feels like there's just limbs flying and he's just blazing. But also it might've just been, some of the tape was a little grainier. Maybe it's once you get into the NFL high definition cameras, it'll look a little more aesthetically explosive. But as long as no one's catching him, who cares? Me and Joshua Jalen Lane have quite a bit in common, though, Logan. We are from the 864. He was born in Spartanburg County in upstate South Carolina, which is the county over from me in Greenville. And then before he was at Virginia Tech, he went to Middle Tennessee State. So we are both Middle Tennessee State transfers. So he and I are going to have a little chat about our old pal, Rick Stockstill, who coached him at MT. So it was 3 years at Middle and then 2 years at Tech.
I love that. I love when there's a smaller school guy who's like made his way up. And like, I just think it speaks to a football and a personal character. And again, we weren't able to get this a couple years ago, but I love seeing that now.
Yeah. And by the way, his dad cheering him on, that's coach. His dad's a high school football coach in South Carolina. He actually was at the absolute like superpower of South Carolina football, James F. Burns High School, and then went to Clover, which is where he had Jalen. And then now he's at Westside High School, where they won, Coach Lane, won the 2023 4A state championship. So, grew up around the game, started off at age five, being a ball boy for his dad. Why do we know this, Logan?
The beast.
Because Dane Brugler's the best. Really cool story. Think about what you were just saying about like a guy who, like what you see on tape of his football character, then I tell you, oh, it's because he's the son of a coach. And you're like, oh, of course.
Yeah, of course. And he's like, he's a small school guy, transferred up, promoted himself to like, I talk about a guy you want to bet on and a guy that you want to support and a guy that in terms of like talent evaluation, like, it's more than the film. You're betting on a guy that's going to do it the right way. And that's very exciting. And you see why, obviously, the Commanders are so high on him.
For sure. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk about the Commanders' last two draft picks. Kane and Bill next on Take Command.